We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Welcome in to Bumper Sports Live from the Open Air Crow Dome at Karen Crow High School, where the Golden Bears of Karen Crow are set to take on the Acadiana Wrecking Rams in just a few hours. But other than that, we're going to get your football weekend kicked off. We're going to talk LSU Tigers in Texas. We're going to talk UL Raging Cajuns and Hugh Freeze's Liberty. We're going to talk some New Orleans Saints Texans on Monday night. And we're just going to have a good old time. Clint D's holding it down for us in the 237 Roof Studio. And we got you covered with some guests. We got Karen Crow football legend, Louisiana High School Sports Association Coaching Hall of Fame member, Mac Barus, joining the program at 4:15. He's going to talk Karen Crow, Acadiana, going to talk about all the different athletes that he coached at his time here. And then at 5:15, Josh Lemoyne of LSU Football Truth and the Primetime Podcast will join us on the program to preview LSU and Texas. That spreads all the way up to 6.5. Boy, oh boy, did that one swing over the last couple weeks after the Tigers just looked like a bunch of dogs against Georgia Southern last week when they revealed their new spread offense. But all that fun and all that, Clint, I'm going to bring you in real quick, and I think there's some other big ball games on the docket on the high school level, on the college level with Clemson and A&M, on the pro level. There's so many. What games really kind of get you excited for this weekend, Clint?
Oh, trust me, there's a lot of games that are getting me excited for the weekend ahead. I mean, obviously, you brought it up, high school football, it is back in action. Pretty much any high school football game is getting me jazzed up, especially the ones that we have on our family of stations. The one you're going to be calling, Karen Crow Acadiana, obviously that one has got me fired up like something else. It's great to kind of start off the season with an old school crosstown former district rivals kickstarting the rivalry once again. It's great to see those two play with a lot more consistency after, obviously, Karen Crow dropped down to 4A. And then, obviously, SCM Holy Cross is going to be played at Yeoman Stadium, which is just really cool to begin with. College football, obviously, Clemson, Texas A&M gets the juices flowing. But that LSU-Texas game is going to be fun.
I mean, it's such a huge ball game so early in the year after LSU just looked like gangbusters in the opening game and Texas really taking, you know, care of their business against Louisiana Tech. Just the public's just swayed this line so much. I mean, you could have got Texas minus 2.5 not even 3 weeks ago. I mean, that point spread swung all the way into the Tigers' favor at 6.5. I mean, this is something that you don't see very often, but as well as the Tigers played, and I mean, look, Texas was a little bit suspect on the back end of their secondary, right? DBU, funny, right? They gave up, over 300 yards passing to that vaunted Louisiana Tech passing offense. So I know a lot of folks looking at that saying, well, I mean, if Louisiana Tech can do it, Joe Burrow and company, with the big wide receivers and the talent LSU has, they should be able to do it as well. I look for LSU to probably come out in this ballgame and really try to establish the run game. I know that most Tiger fans do not want to hear that, but I think Ed Ogeron is very comfortable with that. He knows he has a good defense, that he could play with a lead. This is something that LSU is going to have to do. If there's one thing, if you want to be nitpicky and say LSU struggled with one thing against Georgia Southern, it was really running the football in between the tackles in the red zone. They were able to throw really good in the red zone, hitting the running backs out in the flat, and Joe Burrow going through his progressions and finding the open receiver. But really, when they were trying to establish a run game in between the tackles inside the red zone, LSU struggled a little bit. One thing that I think is going to help the Tigers with that come Saturday and in the future is I think they're going to let Joe Burrow start running the football even more. A lot of those zone read, quote-unquote read plays were just straight handoffs against Georgia Southern. But as you go on in the season and you're playing the Texas, the Floridas, the Auburns, the A&Ms, the Alabamas of the world, they're going to have to rely on Joe Burrow's feet. And you know he has plenty of foot speed to get the job done. He just has to make the correct reads. And he did a tremendous job of that all season long last year. At A&M, he had a few big runs. But the real big one was the dagger against Georgia that really just put the game away for LSU in the fourth quarter, where he was able to take one down inside the five-yard line for about 50 yards. Do you see it the same way, Clint, that Joe Burrow's feet are going to be just as important as his arm come Saturday?
Oh, exactly. I think it's going to be just as important, but I feel like it's going to be a much less pronounced type of Joe Burrow run game, because I think whenever you just look at what Joe Burrow did in his debut, albeit in an entire first half and the opening drive of the second half, he was phenomenal, more so using his arm. But it's the fact that now he has a stable of backs. He's got five running backs that they're probably going to wind up all using over the course of a ball game. You do that, things are starting to look up for the LSU Tigers because you have a lot more options to go with as opposed to maybe what you had in the last couple of seasons.
I think that's another really interesting thing to look at in Saturday's matchup is how do they distribute the carries in the ball game when you have so many talented running backs? I mean, all five guys can go, whether it be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Leonard Fournette, Chris Curry, John Emery, or Tyrion Price-Davis. All five of those guys can go. I think I look at this running back situation, and I look at it very similar to the 2005 LSU team that had guys like Justin Vincent, Joseph Addai, and others, and then the 2011 team where you had guys like Spencer Ware, Kenny Hilliard, and company. And those teams really went with the hot hand and the fresh legs. And when you have so many guys that you could just keep throwing at them left and right, it really makes it difficult to stop, because when everybody else is tired, man, this next guy comes in and he's a change of pace. It's like dynamite in a bottle. Boom. They're able to break another one, big one down, and good physical running backs too. I think all running, I know Clyde Edwards gets a little bit of a bad rep, but he's a physical running back. He can run in between the tackles. He's small. He's small in stature, and he runs really low to the ground, so he's really hard to bring down. So, look, we already got somebody calling in up on the ARCO equipment hotline, and you can too, but let's get Frank aboard. Frank, how goes it on this Friday afternoon? You want to talk about them Tigers?
Yeah, I want to talk about them Tigers. How goes it on this Friday? It's incredibly freaking hot, but I want you to do me a favor. I want you to take your microphone. I want you to slam it on the ground. I want you to kick it and then jump on it, because you just dropped the mic, dude. Ed Orgeron and company on that offense are going to bamboozle Texas. This is not going to be a pass-happy offense like you saw in the first game. I think Ed Orgeron wants to open up a can of worms. That way nobody knows what's coming. You talked about the stable of running backs they have. I think you're going to see at least three of them. And I think they're going to pound the ball and pound the ball and pound the ball. And Texas defense is just, they're not going to be able to weather the storm.
I think you're exactly right, Frank. I think LSU could line up in the I formation some as well. I know they were almost predominantly out of that shotgun formation, but look for some pistol, look for some I back. I mean, you got a fullback like Tony Carter that could just blow the hole up. We know how good he is. They got to rely on some of that Saturday in Texas. When you go to a tough environment to play and you have a defense just as good as LSU's is, you're going to have to rely on a run game. You can't be pass happy all the time. Frank, I really appreciate the call, man. I hope you have a banged up weekend.
Same to you.
See, Clint? People like to get in on the action, and anybody can. You can call up on the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. We're going to do some Ben Love-style sink or swim a couple segments down, and I'll give you a little taste and preview of that. I'm going to want to know if you folks think Joe Burrow is going to go over 250 yards passing. The LSU defense, are they going to be plus two in the takeover category? And then will Sam Ehlinger be able to be held under 75 yards rushing? We're going to head out back to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, and we're going to welcome Ron to the program. Ron, how goes it on this Friday? Oh, Ellis.
Yes.
Ellis, welcome in. Ellis,
yes.
How's it going today?
All righty. Did I misunderstand you, or did you say that St. Thomas More is going to be at Newman, playing at Newman?
Yeah, STM and Holy Cross are going to play at Human Stadium tonight over in New Orleans.
Did they renovate that stadium yet?
They put a thousand
people in the stands there. There's only stands on one side. That's across from the back of the school.
Yeah, Clint D might be able to help you back with that one. I'm unsure. I know STM's headed down there today. They're bringing over Caleb Holstein and Shane Savoy's vaunted offense to take on Holy Cross, which I think is going to be a great game. But great question. I looked that one up in the break. Appreciate the call, Ellis. We're going to head out back to the Arco Equipment Hotline, and we're going to bring Ron on. Ron, how are you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of back up what your first caller said. I think we might toss the ball around early in the game, and I think Ed Oliver going to line up and fly Texas in the mouth and run it down their throat, be honest with you. That's just how I kind of see it, you know.
Yeah, I think this is an LSU team that's going to be able to use the play-action pass to his advantage. You almost saw it against with Les Miles' regime. Is they almost relied heavily on the play-action pass that wasn't open because they couldn't hit the open receivers down the field. But when you have an accurate passer like Joe Burrow in a running game like LSU, I think that's going to be the recipe for success on Saturday.
I agree with that. I don't think we have to get that we pretty much stay simple and beat Texas. I mean, I'm not saying they're not a good team, but I think run it down their throat, throw the ball when we have to, and get out of there with the win.
That 6.5-point spread, you liking the Tigers to cover that?
I'm definitely liking to cover that.
All right, Ron, I like the way you're thinking, man. I hope you have a great weekend.
All right.
Man, Clint, people are jacked up for this LSU-Texas game. I mean, it's been since 2011 when LSU went over to Jerry World and took on Oregon. The last time I remember this kind of excitement before a game, especially this early in the season. I mean, you know everybody gets jazzed up for Bama every year, but this just feels different, this LSU-Texas game. LSU's going on the road, a true road game in the non-conference. It just feels a lot different than most road games the Tigers play.
It really is. It really has been a whole different ballgame what we've seen from this LSU-Texas team. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, like we talked about a lot whenever we were on with the producers, was the fact that there's a lot of hype heading into the 2019 season with that recruiting class that you got, the way the season ended with that dominant win over UCF. I want to see what happens next.
Well, let's head back to the Arco Equipment Hotline one more time in this segment and bring on Charlie. Charlie, how you doing on this Friday afternoon?
Hey, guys, it's a great day. Friday in Louisiana, high school football today, college tomorrow, and the pros on Sunday and Monday. Hot dog.
What a time to be alive, Joe.
It is a good time to be alive. All right, so I'm going to disagree with Frank, and y'all all jumped in on it. That means I'm probably disagreeing with all of y'all. I don't think pounded, pounded, pounded is what we're going to see against Texas. I do believe that we'll see a more balanced running game introduced against Texas, and I hope that that's true, but I think if Coach Ogeron goes back to pounded, pounded, pounded in the I formation, he may be looking for a job. I just don't think that's not where all the energy has gone since the end of last season. Balance, I can see more running and more balance, but if he just tries to pound it down Texas, I just don't think that's a winning formula for the Tigers in 2019.
Well, I agree with you to a certain extent, Charlie. I think what I meant by they're going to run the football more is that they're going to be more balanced. Against Georgia Southern, they were a little bit in the lopsided category. They threw the football more than they ran the football. I think on Saturday evening, I think LSU is going to have to rely on the running game more. Do I think they're going to be predominantly in the I formation? No, of course not. I think this is going to be a team that their base formation will still be the spread. But what I meant by that is they're going to sprinkle in different wrinkles and be able to do different things with this offense because it's so diverse and they can do different things. And when you have a defense as good as LSU's defense, hey, sometimes you got to run the football and play defense, and certain situations will dictate that.
Well, obviously, and that's true, particularly depending on what's going on in the game. It sounded excessive in the earlier call. It sounded like it was not going to be balanced. It was going to be pounded. Sounded more like too much running and not enough passing. And one of the things that will be interesting and why we're all going to be watching Saturday is to see what things come out of the playbook that we didn't see last week. Because Coach O said he didn't show everything, and he knew he wasn't going to. Anything that comes comes out from now on is going to be fascinating and interesting for LSU fans. And I got to be honest with you, I'm intrigued by that because if for no other reason than they did so well playing last week with a whole new playbook. What else have they got in there that they can execute? That's the thing the Tigers did last week that just shocked me, was they didn't have the first game penalties of the stupid offsides and the illegal procedures and all the other kinds of things that can kill a drive. They executed beautifully last week. If they do that with some balance this week and a couple extra coming out of the playbook for the Longhorns, it's going to be a fun game to watch.
I agree, Charlie. I hope you have a great weekend and you enjoy the ball game. I think that's what makes LSU dangerous is the diversity they can have because of the different talent that they have. But we're going to take a quick break, but don't fear, we still have more on your Acadiana Sports Station, 103.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And we're back in to the press box of the Open Air Crow Dome. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And I'm not going to waste any time before we head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline to bring on LHSA Coaches Hall of Fame member, Character Coaching Legend, Coach Mac Barus. Coach, thank you for joining the program this afternoon.
Hey, Blaine, it's good to talk to you. Too kind of a thing, but, we had some good players along the line. That makes a difference, too.
Yeah, it sure does, Coach. And look, the festivities are already starting over here at the Open Air Crow Dome. They got folks tailgating and cooking. It almost feels like one of those late 90s, early 2000 Karen Crow matchups. Coach, going back and looking at your record, you were 12-4 against Acadiana. How did you manage to have such a good record against such a rival opponent?
Well, you know, Acadiana was always one of those teams, Blaine, that we marked on the schedule before the year started. You know, we knew we had to beat them, Orb, and LaGrange, you know, basically, if we wanted to have a chance in district. And those games were always very important to our team. And they got us a couple of times. They got us the year after we won the state championship. They came to the open air Crow Dome as I think Kyle Sebo named that place. I don't know one of those guys. But they came out there and spanked us pretty good, 42-14, 42-21, and 93. That was only one of two games we lost that year. Western Red beat us in the quarterfinals that year. And they got us again in 99 out of Acadiana. We had a kind of a down year, but there was a whole bunch of good games in between. We had so much respect for that program. You know, Coach Dotson and Ted and Willard and those guys out there did such a fine job of teaching. It always, you know, got the best out of our staff because of that. And we were fortunate to have some good games. And, you know, it's funny, three of the four times they beat us while I was there, they were in Denver. And in 2001, we had a lightning delay out of Acadiana. We ended up winning that ball game. I think Allie was a junior that year. And Acadiana came to Carrickville in the quarterfinals and beat us in double overtime, if I'm not mistaken, maybe triple overtime. And the following year, they came back with Ali as a senior, and he ran for about 4 or 5 miles on us. But you know, it's funny, you remember the losses and not too many of the wins. We had a big win out there when Kevin was a senior in 94. Bill Dotson did a great job of promoting the game. It was packed. I went out there to do interviews about this time and was going to go back to Campbell and ride with the team. And by the time I finished, I couldn't get out of the stadium. A team doctor parked in a field on Dulles and cut across the field. Dr. David Foreman walked to get to the game on time. So we got some good ones with them, and we were fortunate while I was there to be on the winning end. But they got us a few times in the 80s when I was an assistant coach. And, you know, they've done a great job the last 15 years. They've been one of the best high school football teams in the state.
Yeah, it seems like when Karen Crow kind of took their downhill turn, Acadiana was right there for the taking, and they kind of took off. I mean, I know you mentioned the 1994 game when Kevin Falk scored the 5 touchdowns. Then you mentioned Ali Broussard, you know, rushing for, you said 500 yards, but I think it was about 260. He went off. I remember that game very vividly. Because I remember Jonathan Kinnison, I believe at the time, his mother passed away, and the team wore black jerseys at home. It was a little bit different. And actually, Carrico went up in that ball game early on, took a fumble down the sideline. I believe it was Darnell Cookie Castile scored the touchdown, and they did a little group celebration in the end zone, and it seemed all downhill after that. It's funny how you remember those kind of things. But I was going to talk a little bit about that 2001. Acadiana was awfully good that year, and Carricker was able to beat him after that lightning delay. Then in the playoffs, Carricker kind of had that game under control, and it looked like we were going to score. I believe you ran Nebraska, and it was a pitch to Stephen Barrett, and out of nowhere, he drops the football.
Hey, those guys are still reminding Steven of that, Blaine. Every time I see Darren Jim, he wants me to check Barrett's hands. He said, keep Barrett away from those Karen Crow punt returners because he can't catch anything. And I think Steve dropped the interception in overtime in the end zone. But, you know, Steve was a great player for us. It's funny, though. It's like I was telling you about remembering those losses. You know, sometimes you remember that kind of stuff and you don't remember the big plays and stuff like that. But that's exactly how that game went. That was the second game that year. It was quarterfinal game in overtime.
Coach, at the high school level, how much do you think home field advantage plays into it? Is it really that big of an advantage to play it somewhere like the Open Air Crow Dome?
You know who's got a good home field advantage? Those teams in Lake Charles. I anybody tells you different, I don't know if they're telling you the truth. It's always good just to go out the back door of school. You know, your routine, you know how it is with high school kids. And, you know, the routine, they get set in a routine, and you very rarely want to break the routine. And even when we went on the road, we tried to keep it as much and normal as possible. But it sure is a lot easier doing the walkthrough in the gym and going out the back of the gym to play a ball game.
Hey, you want to talk about Lake Charles, and you talked about weather. How about, I believe it was 94, it was around the time Devron Patio was here at Karen Crow, and went over there in a monsoon, and we lost a very close game. And I want to say, like, up into the numbers, you couldn't even see the numbers. They had so much water on the field.
No, it's amazing. From about 5 o'clock to about 6:45 that night, we were in the gym. And I think the water was closer to the hash marks. Because I remember Coach McCauley and my dad were standing on the track, and when we got out there, they got ready to walk across to come meet me, and I told them they better be careful. They might drown. But they weren't too tall either, but, you know.
Well, Coach, but, I appreciate you taking the time and joining me. We got to hit to break, but we'll catch up soon, man. Go Bears.
I hear you, Blaine. I hope y'all have a great night, and I'm a big fan of y'all's show. Keep doing what you do for high school football, buddy.
I appreciate it, Coach. That was Coach Mac Byrus, coaching legend. Stay tuned on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
And we're back in to Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Open Air Crow Dome, and I guess it is the return of the Mac, huh, Clint D? We're going to continue to preview Texas and LSU. Aaron McCauley just joined us here, and we're going to bring him on momentarily. He's going to be calling the game along with myself tonight, pregame 6:45. All the action could be heard on Z105.9. We're going to talk Texas LSU, continue that. It seems like that's what the good folks of Acadiana want to talk about, and you can't blame them. LSU bangers in the first game, opening up at 6.5-point favorites at this point. We're going to do a little Ben Love style sink or swim at this point. Hey, anytime you guys want to chime in, remember you can hop on the ArcCo equipment hotline at 337 706-0111. So Joe Burrow, over under 250 yards. And I kind of struggle with this one a little bit. I know we talked about LSU maybe relying more on the ground game, especially maybe even with Joe Burrow's legs on the zone read. But I think you're going to see a balanced attack. It's going to be passing as well. I know Charlie got a little nervous thinking that we're going to go all Les Miles on him, go back to the toss-dive era of LSU football and line up in the I formation 90% of the time. But I don't see that happening with Steve Emsminger and Joe Brady. So I'm leaning more towards over the 250, right at it, you know, 250, 255, somewhere in that ballpark. I think that's what LSU is going to need. They're going to need big splash plays, especially on the road, trying to take the crowd out of the ball game. So give me Joe Burrow over the 250. LSU plus 2 in the turnover category. Can LSU get in the backfield and give Sam Ellinger fits? Can they cause turnovers in the passing game? Grant Delpit and company, can they pick them off? Can the offense also, in the same coin, can they protect the football? Joe Brady, his offense, he gets the ball out very quickly, so I think Joe Burrow will have plenty of time and be able to hold on to the football. And then running the football, LSU didn't put the ball on the ground at all in the opening week. So I'm actually going to take the over in the plus 2 category for LSU on the road. The next sink or swim question, Sam Ellinger, over under 75 yards rushing in the ball game. Look, Sam Ellinger is not one of these flashy quarterbacks that's going to break runs to the outside and run outside the tackles. He's like a better version of Nick Fitzgerald, a Tim Tebow type. I'm not saying he's Tim Tebow. He's just that type of player where he gets big, strong. He's like a running back once he starts running. He's not afraid to lower his shoulder. Has speed to go, but he's more of a physical runner. He also can throw the ball fairly well, but I think Sam Ellinger will be right at 75 yards rushing. I'm going to actually take the over for him in that category, and I think that happens to be more because they don't have anybody to run the football. Only one scholarship running back on the roster at this point with all the injuries they've had. They've had to convert a linebacker to play running back, a quarterback to convert to a running back to play running back this week. That's going to spell trouble when you're playing against a defense as good as LSU. Let's bring on Aaron McCauley now and get his take. I think he's a big LSU fan. I know that, but he's not going to be too biased in this. Joe Burrow on the road at UT, over under 250 yards passing.
Oh, that's a tough one. I really think it's kind of all about how the game will start off and kind of how it's set up early in the game, whether LSU comes out firing. I expect them to take some shots early. If they could build the lead, I think they'd be a little more comfortable, you know, opening up the playbook. The game stays close, 3 or 7 points. They might want to be a little more conservative, kind of afraid to turn it over early in the game in a hostile environment. I think LSU, what they showed in the first game, is they're going to come out there and it's you know, they're really looking to open up that spread offense that Joe Brady brings to New Orleans Saints. So hopefully they get the ball in the playmaker's hands early on and keep on pushing, keep the pedal to the metal. A lot of people complained about Les Miles, you know, is kind of old school style of running and mashing, keeping the game close. I think LSU would like to make a statement that they've arrived. They're here. The offense is really evolving to the 21st century. And I like Joe Burrow over 250, not by much, maybe 275. With a good completion percentage.
And look, we say spread offense. It's almost like it's a controlled spread offense, though. They gave them easy throws early in that ball game, dumping it down to the running backs underneath, getting the running back the ball in the flats. They did some screen game stuff. So they do give them easy throws. They did it against Georgia Southern. I think you see that again on Saturday night. Now let's look at LSU in the turnover category. Do you have them over or under plus 2 in that margin?
I like them over plus 2. What I see is, I think Sam Ellinger, like you said about Nick Fitzgerald, he's not quite as talented as a runner, but he's a better passer. LSU gets on him quick. Maybe they go up by a couple scores. I see Sam Ellinger pressing, holding the ball too long, trying to really force the action, maybe holding it, get a strip sack, maybe throwing into coverage, trying to make a play that's not really there. I could see, you know, maybe 2 interceptions and a fumble on the day. So probably 3, LSU plus 3 in that category.
And then Sam Ellinger, I mean, you talked about him maybe not being the runner Nick Fitzgerald is, but he's almost all that Texas has in that running offense. So plus or minus, do you see them going over or under 75 yards rushing with Sam?
I could see him getting over 75 yards rushing, but what's going to get him is I think we're going to get after him as a passer and really come up with – I could see LSU getting 5 or 6 sacks behind the line of scrimmage, you know, him kind of booting out, getting way beyond, losing 15, 12 yards on a few plays to push him under 75 yards rushing net. So I see him under 75 yards rushing on the game.
Well, look, when LSU played Louisville in the bowl game a few years back, Dave Aranda did such an excellent job forcing Lamar Jackson to stay in the pocket, and they're able to get after the quarterback. So I think that's going to be something that you're going to see Aranda do. I'm not sure if they're going to rely on a quarterback spy or just try to keep him in the pocket, but Dave Aranda's shown that he could do that. Clint D., we'll bring you on now. And look, I think that Aaron had some good points, especially with Joe Burrow in the passing game going over the 250. I know you and I talked about it, and you're all in on this spread offense, so I can't imagine you thinking that Joe Burrow goes under the 250.
Last week, I definitely regretted him picking him to go under 275. It was a little bit of a bad beat, so I'm going to go with over 250. I feel like that's a lot more reasonable based off of what you're going to see from this Texas defense. I think you're going to see Joe Burrow go over 250, possibly creeping up on 300 yards over the course of that ball game. And the second one, plus 2 turnover, I'm going to go – I feel like this one's almost a push, but I'm going to go with over here as well because it feels like 2 turnovers might be the limit there for this ball game. It's probably be the big determining factor for that. So I'll go plus 2. There might be – LSU might commit a bad turnover late in the ball game to cause it to be plus 2, but still definitely a good look for LSU. And then, if I'm not mistaken, it was 75 yards rushing for Sam Ellinger, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I'm going the under on that one. I feel like he's going to be under pressure a lot. He's going to have to scramble, but I feel like they're going to stop him before long.
Yeah, and my reasoning more so is just they have nobody else to run the football. So I think you're going to see a lot of quarterback power, some quarterback draws, and they're going to try to run him in between the tackles. And I don't know if that's such a good idea against a defense like LSU, as physical and fast as they are. I mean, look, LSU could plug and play linebackers. I mean, they got 4 guys that could play in the middle. You can line up some of those guys on the outside. I know Aaron and myself were talking this morning about LSU's depth at linebacker. I think this would almost set them apart in this ball game. What say you, Aaron?
I agree. I'd hate to be the defensive coordinator at LSU. I'd love to make the money, but I'd hate to have to choose on 2 middle linebackers and who to sit. I mean, you got a guy like Patrick Queen coming off the bench that's as athletic as anybody in the country. I think he led LSU in the tackle percentage as far as missed tackles go last year. I think he was like 86% when he got his hands on somebody that came down, which was a team best. And that guy's sitting the bench for you last week. You got Michael DeVandy coming back. You know, what do you do with him? They thought about moving him inside. He'll probably play inside. He could play outside. I think he had 8 sacks last year at outside linebacker. I mean, it's really the strength of the team.
Pick your poison, right?
It's pick your poison. LSU is almost as an embarrassment of riches at the middle linebacker spot. Damone Clark is a redshirt freshman that's kind of came onto the scene in spring. You know, they can't keep him off the field. He's probably 6'3", 235, can run.
Runs like a deer. And how about the tackles in the open field? He's just too good.
No, LSU's dangerous there. I mean, in space is where their advantage is. You know, if Texas wants to run east and west, especially Ellinger trying to get out of the pocket, he'll probably come down pretty quick for some big losses.
Yeah, we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Phil wants to join in and play with us. Phil, how's it going on this Friday afternoon?
Good, brother. This is Phil from Calco.
Oh, Phil, good to see you, man. Hear from you, man. We got a big ball game here in Carrancrow tonight. You know, Carrancrow, KDN, crosstown rivalry.
I'll be here on the
How do you see that ball game going tonight, Phil?
Oh, I'm glad Carrancrow has scheduled an easy game the first week. No, I'm just joking. I got some cousins and friends that live in Scott and Wataki, Anna. I don't know. I don't like that they're playing the first week. I know that.
I think this is an advantage for Carrancrow to see him in week one. Look, this is an Acadian team that's extremely talented. They think that they have an absolute chance to go deep into the playoffs and maybe contend for a state championship. They returned everybody in the backfield. Lucky Brooks, Dylan Monette, and Keon Williams are all guys that played last year and were very good. I mean, Dylan Monette is only 1,400 yards away from breaking Ali Broussard's
career rushing record at Acadiana, and Mac Byrus was on with us just a segment ago telling you how good Allie Broussard was when he was at Acadiana. So I think Karen Crow, catching him in week one is a benefit for Karen Crow. They can maybe catch him before they get their feet underneath him.
Is it true what I heard that Karen Crow is running some sort of their offense too, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Gavin Peters came over from Acadiana. He's Karen Crow's offensive coordinator. He's in year two of being at Karen Crow. And look, last year they were a predominantly straight veer team, especially later in the season as the season went on. But, hey, this year, especially in the Jamboree against Bro Bridge, he showed that he could be multiple. Karen Crow lined up in a little bit of a trip. So they lined up in the ace formation, I formation. They even did some shotgun. So I don't think Karen Crow is going to be strictly veer as they were last year. Last year's talent level, especially some struggles on the offensive line, might have dictated that they went strictly veer. This is a different year, a different team. Karen Crow has four offensive linemen that this is third year contributing in. Most of those guys started all three of those years. So I think Karen Crow's offense this year will see some veer. It's going to be veer base and veer oriented, but you will see some other things sprinkled in.
For the veer, you have to have a good offensive line, pretty much. I mean, you know, yeah, we have to build off the ground regardless, but you have to hold your blocks longer or not really?
Nah, actually, in the veer, you may be able to hide an offensive line a little bit. You don't have to hold your blocks quite as long because it's a little bit of trickery and a little bit of ball control. But Kevin Falk's nephew, Tavion Falk, the quarterback, he could run a little bit as well. But, Phil, I appreciate the call, and hopefully your Golden Bears can pull it off tonight here in the open-air Crow Dome.
Can I pull out the LSU score, which I think it'll be?
LSU score? You want to give us a Tiger score?
Oh, yeah, 35-20.
Cool, 35-20. I appreciate it, Phil. Enjoy your weekend, buddy.
Thanks.
I'm going to wait a little bit later in the program to give my LSU prediction, but we're having so much fun here. We're going to keep the ball rolling right on the other side of the break. We're going to jump right back in to a little bit LSU Texas, and then Clint D is going to tell us all you need to know about the Raging Cajuns and Hugh Freeze and Liberty, all on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics out there and... This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. I'm Blaine Viator, and I'm live at the open-air Crow Dome at Karen Crow High School getting ready for the big matchup. The Karen Crow High Golden Bears playing host to the Acadiana Wrecking Rams, cross-town district rivals. That'll happen at 7 p.m., and the pregame show could be heard starting at 6:45 on Z105.9. I'm going to bring Clint D aboard, though, and we're going to talk a little bit UL Raging Cajuns versus the Liberty Flames. I know everybody wants to talk about Hugh Freeze coaching up in the coaching box in a bed, but I think this game has a lot more to it than just that. UL was highly competitive against SEC opponent Mississippi State in week one over at the Superdome, dropping that ball game 38-28. And Levi Lewis, I mean, if you'd have watched him in the first drive, you'd have said he looked lost. He looked like a deer in the headlights. But as that game progressed, Clint, he got his feeding under him. He got a little bit more comfortable, and he was able to do some damage.
He was much more improved in the season opener. After the fourth drive, he looked so much better. Those first three drives, you can kind of chalk those up to, I'd say, almost nerves. The dude was nervous as all get out for those first couple of drives. I'll give the defense a ton of credit. They wound up looking so much better up against a team like Mississippi State. They could have been just absolutely trounced before the first quarter even ended. It could have been like a 21-0 ball game, especially after that interception you talked about earlier. It's a huge step in the right direction when it comes to the Cajuns being able to compete, cover, and more importantly, keeping a 10-point ball game against a Mississippi State team that headed into the season with a lot of hype.
Well, you know, the Cajuns also have a three-headed monster over at the running back position. You got Raymond Colley from you know, over at from Cecilia. Then you got Trey Regis, you know, New Orleans product, and Elijah Mitchell over from ERATH. Any of those guys can go. I know they gave Elijah Mitchell the most carries in the opener with 14, but the other guys were 9 and 8, so they were right behind him. They like to share the football and kind of keep with that same, keep fresh legs in the ballgame.
And I think that works out quite well. I mean, we're seeing it work out quite well for LSU last week, wound up throwing out a lot of their running backs. And when you look at the Cajuns, their three guys, their three-headed monsters, they were pushing the pile consistently up against Mississippi State, which was impressive. You've got to imagine how much easier it's going to be for the Cajuns' run game up against Liberty. The one thing you're going to be more concerned about, though, about the Cajuns and the run game, and also, in turn, the quarterback, and if he can stay upright, is going to be the offensive line. You got Ken Marks. He's going to be out for the entire year along with Johnny Lumpkin. That seemed like an inevitability with Lumpkin. With Marks, that was kind of a surprise and a shock to everything, but you'll see Max Mitchell, Osiris Torrance. They'll be taking over a big part of that offensive line and being able to try and keep things going for that run game, because I feel like these guys, this veteran offensive line, is taking a lot of hits, and I feel like eventually we're going to see some things work out, especially with guys like Max Mitchell and Osiris Torrance, once they get more experience and more continuity with the O-line. We've seen that work out quite well for Shane Vallow, now the center for the Cajuns, after Cole Perdomo was ruled out for the entire year.
Well, look, Billy Napier in his first year exceeded all expectations. And now year two, I mean, you really have real expectations and real hopes for the season. I mean, Liberty coming in week two, you really want to defend home field and open up the season with, you know, a big victory. Tell me a little bit about Liberty. What do you see with them on offense? What they like to do? And how does that pose a threat to the Raging Cajuns?
I think when you look at the Flames offense, I think it's going to be more of a passing offense. You'll have to, the secondary is definitely going to have to be on their P's and Q's against them. But, you know, we saw what happened last week against Syracuse. The offense just couldn't get out of their own way, losing 24-0. So it's going to be an offense that's still trying to figure out its way. And it doesn't help matters. You brought up Hugh Freeze. He's going to be coaching from a dentist chair tomorrow night. So that, it's just, there's a lot of things going on with Liberty to where maybe the offense won't be on point until possibly midway through the season, whenever Hugh Freeze finally gets over all this and he's able to stand upright and, more importantly, be on the sideline. Because you can about imagine how much of a pain it is to have a head coach coaching from the press box instead of coaching on the sideline and motivating his guys.
Well, you always hear the old cliche. You see the most improvement from week one to week two. So we're already seeing it with Liberty, right? They're going from hospital bed to dentist chair. Now, I think the most strangest thing in the whole Hugh Freeze saga, if you will, with the hospital bed was, did you catch the story about what happened in the third quarter of the ball game against Syracuse?
I did not.
Hugh Freeze had to relieve himself. So he had to get help from his coaches in the coaching booth to block the window so he could get up and relieve himself in the middle of the ball game.
Oh, boy. My goodness. Hugh Freeze is football guy 101 right there.
Yeah, Twitter never disappoints. Now, on defense, holding Syracuse to 24 points, that's sort of impressive. I mean, this was a Syracuse team that put up points in bunches last year and was really good. So that defense against the Cajuns offense, how do you see that matchup going?
I think we see the Cajuns offense push the pile. We see them do the right things that we expect them to do. I think they can wind up putting up 30, possibly 35 on Liberty coming up tomorrow at night. Because one of the big things for me is this offensive line probably holds itself up well, and you've still got a really decent tight end in Nick Ralston. He showed off in a big way. More importantly, you've still got a lot of your wide receivers that you didn't necessarily get to show it nearly as much love.
And when the spread came out, Cajuns minus 13, I kind of laughed at it. I really, really thought that UL would open up at about a 20-point favorite. So if you're one of the degenerate types and you like laying your hard money down on a team, I take the Raging Cajuns. I like them to cover really easy. Clint, I believe we're going to save a little bit of time for the one last word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
It's not quite Ben, but it'll have to do for at least one more day with the final word of the 4 o'clock hour. And that final word is rivalry. We're looking forward to the big rivalries. They'll be getting started off tonight with high school football. Carrico, Acadiana. Blaine Viatar is out there with Aaron McCauley. They'll be calling the game on Z105.9. Undoubtedly a rivalry game. You'll have to listen in to hear all the action. Of course, you got STM. You got Southside. You got Lafayette High. They're all on action as well. And they're all through our family at Delta Media Stations. Take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. Hour number two of Bumper to Bumper Sports coming up in just a little bit.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now
let's get started.
Welcome back into Bumper to Bumper Sports. I'm Blaine Viatar. Hour two of two. Hour one, so much fun. So much LSU Texas talk. A little high school football talk. Got in on the Liberty Eagles. I'm sorry, the Liberty Flames coming over to Cajun Field. So much fun, and we're going to keep the ball rolling in hour number two. We're live from the open-air Crow Dome at Carrico High School, and people are starting to pile in, Aaron. I mean, look, back in the day when Carrico was really at its height, when it was at its power in the Byrus days, they would pack this thing out in a game like this. But attendance has been down recently, but I think tonight has all the makings of a big crowd. They're cooking over in the corner. The music's blaring already. Acadiana folks across from us are starting to show up. You're starting to get a lot of that high school pageantry and excitement in the air. This is going to be a great night for high school football.
Exactly. You know, this town really needs a good program, good football team, and the kids need the support. You know, like he was saying, the Byrus days in the, 90s, early 2000s. I mean, there was standing room only. Didn't matter if you're playing Acadiana or you're playing Como or whoever. People like a winner. You know, if Coach Corville and the guys get this program rolling again, people, will return. You know, they have a proud history. When you play a team like Acadiana, it's always going to be a good game. It's a natural rivalry. The kids get excited by it. I heard there was some talk on social media this week, so everyone seems to be fired up.
Yeah, it's so exciting, and high school football's just it gets me fired up. It's pure for the sport. The kids play for the love of the game. The tight-knit, close communities really make it what it is. And I'm excited for a number of matchups on the docket tonight, even outside of our family and networks. One of the games I'm really excited about are the Church Point Bears playing host to the Notre Dame Pios tonight. I really think this is a Church Point team that returns their entire backfield, a rusher in Richard who had 1,600 yards last year, and they were awfully good. They lost in the playoffs to Sterlington in an absolute triple overtime thriller. Same Sterlington team that went on to play in the semifinals. So they were really close last year. I think Church Point has the opportunity to take a step up. Notre Dame Pios of Acadia Parish. You know what you get with them and Louis Cook. So that I think that's a good matchup on the docket tonight. Another one that got me a little bit excited in the area are the LCA Knights taking on the Westgate Tigers over in New Iberia. Look, this is going to be a team that's loaded with talent. In both of them, really. But LCA, you got guys like Sage Ryan, who's a borderline five-star in the class of 2021, and a number of guys. Look, they're moving up to 2A this year, so it's going to be a different ballgame for them. They're not going to have Trev Falk on the sidelines for them. We all know what's going on with that. But look, guys like Fitzgerald West, Logan Gabriel, ton of talent. The UL Raging Cajun commit, Errol Rogers Jr., a guy who could play a number of positions just like Sage Ryan. But on the flip side of the field, the Westgate Tigers are absolutely loaded as well. They got guys like Kayshawn Boutte, the four-star product, the top three consensus player in the state of Louisiana and committed to LSU, along with McKelvin's son. He's another guy that is committed to Kansas State, a Power 5 school that could play wide receiver, kind of a guy that could juke you out of your shoes and really go. I think this game is going to be a shootout. I know Westgate kind of struggles typically earlier in the season, but they got to show up tonight and put up points to be able to play with a team like Westgate. Any games that you really saw that stand out to you, Aaron?
You know, I think Terlings will be a little better than people think they are. They played a tough Acadiana team in the Jamboree. They really had some mental errors, some turnovers. I think they'll be better than they showed out in the Jamboree. Looking for STM just to blow the doors off of anybody and everybody this year. I mean, they're loaded. The kid, Jack Besh, has got offers from all over Ivy League. I mean, they got two quarterbacks that could probably start anywhere in the state almost if you want to throw the ball. And it's just kind of an embarrassment of riches over there at STM.
Yeah, and you mentioned Terlings. They're going to play host to Como tonight. And I think Como's got an explosive offense, too. The wide receiver Neighbors over there, the class of 2022 prospect, he's absolute dynamite. I mean, the kid went out and dominated 77, played with the Louisiana Bootleggers this summer. The kid could absolute go. But Terling showed me something in the Jamboree, and they were kind of one of my surprise teams, even though they took the L to Acadiana. Look, Acadiana had big splash plays, right? They returned the opening kickoff, Dylan Monette for a touchdown. They had another 83-yard touchdown later in the game. But they were able to kind of weather the storm. Acadiana really wasn't able to put together big, long drives that you see that kind of just suck the life out of you. And you get a guy like Samuel LeBlanc, who's finally healthy, coming back for Coach Saponche and company. I think Terlings is a team, as you mentioned, will be improved this year. They have a tough challenge tonight against 5A Como, but watch them. And the other game that's going to be on our family of networks, as Aaron mentioned, is the STM Cougars over on 103.7 The Game. Danny and Jones and company will take you home in that one. They're going to travel to Holy Cross, and Holy Cross plays in that New Orleans Catholic district. They got some hosses in that district, so I think they're going to be up for the task. But as you mentioned, Caleb Holstein, Walker Howard, Besh, I think you're going to be able to throw a number of different looks at them. They also have the tight end, Howard, who's committed to McNeese. He could absolutely play, too. So I think this is an STM team that's just locked and loaded. They're going to challenge U-High this year for the state championship in that classification. Clint D., I'll bring you on now. I know you mentioned Southside, and they were one of my surprise teams. They played Notre Dame pretty tough in the Jamboree, but what do you see from them? I know they opening up with Northside, maybe not the greatest of opponents, a team that really struggles with numbers. I still, for the life of me, can't understand how that team's not a 3A a school, but they still play in 4A. What do you look forward to in week one of the high school matchups?
I mean, I think that's definitely the thing I'm most looking forward to, is see what Southside can do in their first game that's actually going to matter. They look good in that Jamboree. Let's see how they look whenever you got the bright lights of high school football shining upon you in Northside. It's something that's going to be a little bit of a different crowd environment as opposed to what we saw at Cajun Field during those Jamborees. I'm intrigued to see what's going to be going down with the Southside Sharks week one against Northside.
Yeah, and another team that I just put an asterisk around this year is the Eunice High Bobcats. They won a state championship in 3A last year. They moving up into the 4A classification. They absolutely walloped Northwest last night, 73-34. Northwest is one of their district foes from a year ago, but I mean, they absolutely just crushed them. I think this is going to be a little bit different level of playing field for the Eunice Bobcats. I'm not sure they're going to be up for the task quite like they were last year, but I think that's something to watch out. The other one for me is Vince Derwin and the St. Martinville Tigers. Look, they were absolutely great last year. I know they lost Travis Benjamin. The guy was phenomenal, all-district-type performer. They went 10-0 in the regular season before falling to Leesville in the quarterfinals. But them moving down to 3A, they're going to be a bully. I really, truly think that, Clint, they're going to be a bully. I know Karen Crow is going to play them later on down the road in October. But I think in that 3A classification, they have to be one of the favorites for the state championship.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be, without a doubt, one of the strong, strong favorites for that 3A state title. Looking forward to seeing what that program winds up doing going forward.
And two teams that play tonight that I can't quite figure out are the New Iberia Yellow Jackets with Kurt Ware, first game for him over at New Iberia. So it'll be a little bit different look. You're not going to see the traditional spread you out and chunk the football over the field of the Yellow Jackets. They'll be in the wing tee, a little bit tighter formation. But they play host to Brobridge. And Brobridge got all kind of dogs all over that field. They got Trevante Sylvester committed to La Tech. You got Dartavian Girard, who's committed to Southern Miss. But Carrico absolutely dominated him last week in the Kiwanis Jamboree. I think that's a team that's going to get their footing as the season goes on. They're starting a first-year starting quarterback. I don't think the play calling did them any favors last week. I think that's still a team who was very good last year, went 8-2 and took that St. Martinville team I just talked about to the brink of a loss in the last game of the regular season. I think that is a team that's going to be okay as the season progresses. I'm just so jacked up and ready for some high school football, though, and I think there's a lot of teams in the area that have a chance to possibly make a little bit of noise. We got somebody that wants to talk a little high school football, and that's pretty exciting for me. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, and we're going to bring on Mike. He's from Eunice, and I think he wants to talk a little bit of Eunice football.
What's happening, guys? I heard y'all mention that Eunice game last night. Did you guys know that Eunice was actually losing that game in the third quarter? They put up 42 points on the board in the fourth period.
Wow.
They
must have had a bunch of turnovers or something. No, I did not. Holy smokes.
Ton of turnovers. They put up a school record points and then school record points in the fourth quarter. They scored 42 points in the fourth period. They were down in the third quarter of that game. Unbelievable.
Well, Mike, how did they turn it around?
I didn't watch the game. I had some buddies that were there that were texting me during the game, but turnovers and capitalized off the turnovers. I was like, damn, man, and did the starters come in off the bus at the end of the third quarter or what? What happened? And, they said ton of turnovers, and you just capitalized on those turnovers. 42 points in the fourth period.
Mike, how do you see Eunice transitioning from 3A classification up to 4A this year?
It's going to be tough. Everybody knows 4A, you know, public school is dominant. You got Ed Nacar. You saw that game last night where they took John Curtis to the wire. There's a ton of great football teams in public school and 4A, so I think it's going to be tough for those guys. But they'll be competitive, but it's still going to be tough.
Mike, I appreciate the call, and I'm excited other folks are jacked up for high school football as well.
Absolutely.
Hey, you see, Clint? Other people like to talk a little high school little pigskin there. You know, people are getting excited. Speaking of exciting, man, this place is starting to fill up, and we got more action we'll bring you from the Open Air Crow Dome as Bumper to Bumper Sports returns on your home for Acadiana Sports Talk, 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in to Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Crow Dome at Carrico High School. But we're ready to talk a little bit more LSU Texas. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and bring on Josh Lemoine of LSU Football Truth and Primetime Podcast. Josh, how goes it this Friday afternoon?
Man, it's doing good. I'm just ready for this game to come. It's been a lot of personal talk this week, man. It's almost like it's an Alabama game.
Yeah, it seems like the fan bases, the players, even the coaching staff taking shots. How do you think this team's psyche is heading into this matchup against the Texas Longhorns?
You know, when you look at the game and what's on the line, you know, I think these guys are just ready to play. There's been talk, you know, on both sides of the ball with these teams as far as the T-shirts and who is actually – DBU, and you know, and you hear Clavion Chase on say some strong words. I just think both teams are ready to go. Both teams feel like they've kind of got over that hump the last couple years I think they really just want to go and show the public and their fan bases, you know, that we have actually arrived. But I think it's good energy. I think all the way around, it's good energy. And, you know, I expect to see LSU come out on Saturday night flying around.
You know, about a month ago, you could have got LSU plus 2.5. The spread swung all the way over to LSU, and LSU's now a minus 6.5 favorite. Is that number kind of scare you a little bit, how much LSU was able to change once the nation got a glimpse of this spread attack that Coach Ogeron's been talking about all offseason?
You know, I mean, I've been asked that a few times, you know, the last few days. But honestly, I think it probably has more to do with the fact that Texas has just so many guys hurt at the running back position. Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of it, you know, is Vegas seeing that LSU actually committed to this offensive attack. It only took 20 years, but, you know, they did it. But I think when you hear Coach Herman speak at his press conferences, that he said he's never seen this before, you know, and in all the years he's been coaching, he's got five guys out. He has one guy on scholarship that's going to play running back, a guy that was playing quarterback, now he's playing running back, and a walk-on. Coach Herman knows. He's been around a long time. He's coaching big games. That when you play the SEC, you know, a lot of times you need two or three running backs. It's going to be a long night. So I think LSU kind of knows going into this game, you know, they can't run the ball 30 times at LSU. They just don't have the guys at the position. So it kind of makes those guys one-dimensional in a sense that they're going to probably have to throw more than they want to and run their quarterback.
Well, now that you've seen LSU spread attack and they actually did what we heard they were going to do and able to throw the ball all over the field, what's your number one concern going into this game?
You know, my concern that I've brought up all this week is, can LSU move the ball against a quality opponent with this spread? We've seen it against a good program, but, you know, I'm not going to sit here and lie. They're not a top-tier program. So my biggest concern going into this game is, will this offensive spread attack, will it look the same against a Texas team that does have four- and five-star recruits, you know, that actually has top-tier talent? Look, I don't expect LSU to come out and score 55 or 60 points on Texas. That's not what I'm saying. But 28 to 35 points, you know, that's what this spread attack should be able to give you, you know, against a young Texas defense. They replaced eight guys on that defense. So I think LSU will have the opportunity to make some plays. I just want to see if LSU can put it together for 2 weeks in a row.
You bring up some good points, especially one is when you talk about Texas and how the line has swung LSU's way. I think the main thing you were hitting on was the lack of balance. People think that the lack of balance Texas will have, having only one scholarship running back. I mean, you really can't afford to run Ellinger 20 times because, I mean, if he goes down, I mean, you're definitely done. So I think LSU will look to have much more balance running the ball and passing the ball. Texas is not going to be a real good game plan to go out and throw the ball four times against this LSU secondary and pass rush.
No, I agree. That's what they might have to do at the end of the day. You know, like I said, if you listen to Coach Herman, you know, he pretty much kind of came out and said that without saying it. You know, they're going to have to be selective how they use their running back and, you know, how they go about how many carries they give him early in the game. And then you definitely don't want to run Sam Ellinger 25 times, you know, right into the face of LSU's defensive line. That's not going to play out good. So, you know, I think Texas just, it might be a game where they actually might have to throw the ball 45 times into LSU's backfield, and that's not something that that's probably not going to work out real well. But you know, only time will tell.
Josh Lemoyne joining us right now on the ARCO Equipment Hotline of LSU Football Truth, as well as the Primetime Podcast. Josh, finish the statement for me. LSU wins Saturday night if.
LSU wins Saturday night if they can get pressure on the quarterback. They need to get pressure on Sam early. Put him, you know, knock him on the ground a little bit. Make him feel that pressure. When you get him off his platform, his percentage drops way down. I did quite a bit of film study on him. I watched about 10 different games. And when you get pressure on Sam, his accuracy, it goes way down. He tends to overthrow the ball quite a bit. LSU wins if they can get some hits on a quarterback and put pressure on Sam Ellinger.
One thing we talked a lot about in hour number one is the LSU running backs. I mean, you got five guys you could throw at them at any time in the ball game. How do you see Coach Ed Orgeron and Tommy Robinson and company splitting up those carries on Saturday night?
I think we're going to see something like we did in week one. I think, you know, Clyde comes out as the steady back. I made a, you know, I made a post earlier in the week, and I did some film study on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's kind of like the Mark Ingram to me of this offense. You know, Joe Brady comes over from the Saints, and I just feel like he's that steady back with Clyde, and they're going to use him like that. It won't be flashy, you know, but at the end of the day, Clyde's going to have 60, 70 yards rushing. He's going to have four or five catches for 50 or 60 yards to just kind of keep the chains moving. But I think, you know, John Emery, Ty Davis, I think that's where you'll see a little bit of that flash. Some of those wheel routes swinging out the backfield. You know, these guys are – that's why they went and recruited them, right? Those guys are the game breakers. And I think that's kind of how you're going to see this play out. They're going to put Emery and Ty, try to put them guys in space to make some plays.
You talk a lot about, you know, the fan bases, the players talking. One of the things the fan base seems to hang their hat on is this game's being played at Texas. How much do you make of that, and how much of an advantage do you think that's going to be for the Longhorns?
No, it's definitely going to be an advantage. Look, you know, it's 100,000 people in the stadium. At night, it's going to be rocking. Texas feels like, you know, they feel a lot like LSU. Let's be honest. They've been really trying to get over this hump the last couple of years. You know, look, we've read about the Coach Herman, Coach O, the connection when Texas went and kind of stole time from LSU. So both the programs have kind of been on that same path, you know, and I think they both feel like they're right there on the cusp of, you know, of breaking over. So this is going to be big for Texas. They know it's on on the line there, and I think they're going to come out and play with a lot of energy. At the end of the day, I think just LSU has just got a few more guys that are going to the NFL, and their twos and threes right now are just a notch above Texas. Texas struggled in the recruiting ranks for a few years when they were struggling. I think LSU and Coach O's done a good job of building the program like we used to expect it in, you know, 2010, 11. They can go two and three deep, and almost every one of them guys is going to play in the NFL.
All right, Josh, it's put up or shut up time. What's the final score, and do the Tigers come out with the victory in Austin?
Yeah, look, I've been saying it all week, 31-14 after I did extensive film study on both teams. And, you know, with only one run scholarship running back, I think it puts Texas in a tough position this game. I got LSU 31, Texas 14. With that being said, I want to say, because LSU fans think this could be a cakewalk, if LSU doesn't come out with that same energy and intensity like they did in week one, Texas is plenty talented enough to make this a close game or beat LSU.
Well, Josh, I appreciate the time, man. We're going to talk more as the season progresses.
All right, guys. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks. Josh Lemoine of LSU Football Truth and the Primetime Podcast broke it all down for you. And, Aaron, he had some good points about how LSU should attack Texas and how he thinks Texas will attack or shouldn't attack LSU.
Oh, yeah, you got to force Texas to throw the ball. I mean, that's your advantage in the secondary. Everybody talks about DBU and the real DBU. I think LSU comes out to prove that. Two corners that likely both play in the NFL one day, as well as both safeties. So, I think it's going to play right in LSU's hands.
Yes, and this is so much fun. We've still got 30 minutes left on the program, so hang tight, and we'll be back on the other side of this break on your home for Acadiana Sports Talk, 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
And we're back in to the press box of the Open Air Crow Dome, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and I'm Blaine Vietar filling in for Ben Love. CD, I think we should probably throw a little bit of shade. It's been so hot outside, I think it's time to throw some shade.
I think it is time to throw some shade, and you talked about it. It is a hot one, so why not cool off thanks to the good pros at Patio Center. They will gladly hook you up with some fantastic shade, and we got some coming your way as well. But make sure you check out the pros at Patio Center. Just go to the website, patiocenter.com.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
You know, sometimes we could kind of just go with the easy stuff and go with, obviously, the whole story about Antonio Brown and his tearful apology, and I'm using air quotes heavily there, by the fact that he is actually finally going to wind up playing. Maybe we'll see what happens as the weekend progresses, because things could wind up changing. But I got two things of throwing shade, a twofer. I'll start things off with a report that Sam Ellinger's phone number was leaked, and fans are texting the quarterback for the Texas Longhorns. Whoever did that, please be better. It's coming from the Paul Feinbaum Show. A reporter put this out, and that is Maria Taylor saying that somehow LSU fans have found out Sam's number. He's got 600-something texts from LSU fans and getting calls nonstop, but he's dealing with it like these are the games that he came to Texas to play for. So I got to give him a lot of credit for kind of rising above it when it comes to that. But seriously, be better. Don't be bothering a guy on his phone nonstop. It's a little ridiculous that somebody actually wound up getting his number from one. But that's shade number one. Shade number two, I think we got to go with our long national nightmare. It is finally over. And I'm talking about what's going on with the whole Saints Nolan no-call. The judge threw the case out after almost the entire offseason. It's spent just there. We were waiting for it to finally happen, but I'm glad that this thing is finally over, because it was ridiculous from the jump. And finally, somebody came to their senses and finally said, hey, we're done with this. Football season's back. Let's focus on that and get a Super Bowl, baby.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Couple thoughts on both of those points, CD. I think it's absolutely absurd, and it's kind of weak sauce, you know, for LSU's fan base to get the phone number and target Sam Ellinger. You've seen LSU do this with Tim Tebow in the past, with Johnny Football, and honestly, the two times they did it, it didn't end well. Tim Tebow brought the Florida Gators into Death Valley and won that year. And, I mean, LSU beat A&M, but to me, it's a bad look for the fan base, and you just got to be better than that. As far as the Saints, look, we don't expect the team to have a hangover, right? So the fan base needs to get over the no call. Let's march forward. This team's set up for success this year. Let's look at what we got in front of us, right, CD?
Exactly. That's why I'm just glad this thing finally got dismissed, because we've been waiting months for this bad boy to finally just get out of our lives altogether. But, you know, you brought it up perfectly, Blaine, and I want to get your thoughts on this. This isn't necessarily shade. This is almost – I want your analysis on this. Because Coach O, earlier in the week, he talked about Sam Ellinger, compared him to Tim Tebow, but with a better arm. Was that a little shade there from Coach O on Tim Tebow?
I mean, I don't know if it's shade. I mean, you know how great Tim Tebow was. I mean, what do you have, 28 touchdowns as a sophomore when the Heisman Trophy, and he was so good for the Florida Gators. I don't know if there was shade. It might have been said a little tongue-in-cheek. You know how these quotes go. Tom Herman had some interesting quotes that I think were probably taken out of context this week as well. So I don't know if it was shade. I don't think Sam's anywhere near the level in the class that Tim Tebow is. Just personally, I mean, Tim Tebow, four-year starter in the SEC, you know, won multiple national championships, so on and so forth.
But we'll see what happens tomorrow night whenever he plays LSU, because that's going to be a true test for him, as opposed to, you know, whenever you're playing in the Big 12 offensive-heavy, offensive-friendly defenses they play. So he'll have a true test tomorrow night.
Right, and you know, some Texas players took shots at LSU saying, well, that's why their defenses are so good, because the offenses aren't as good in the SEC, which is a bunch of baloney. What a jabroni to say something like that. I know we kind of went ahead and attacked it, Aaron and I, and Josh and I as well. But I want to get your take. I mean, what you think's the one thing LSU has to do or can't do to win this football game tomorrow night in Austin?
They absolutely have to keep things the way they are on offense. They can't deviate from the norm, from what we saw last week. We can't see it. You know, Jordy, he talked about it during his show, about what the first play is going to be like, where he wants it to be five wide. I love that idea. I'd probably wind up just doing that. As long as you don't do a toss dive in the first play of the game, I think things will be okay. I just want to see this team continue to be consistent from the aspect of being that true spread offense that we've heard so much about and been hyped up about ad nauseum. Give me that LSU team. They have to do that if they want to wind up winning. And one thing they cannot do in this one is, whenever you just look at that, whenever it's like, you, one thing you cannot do tomorrow night is allow Texas and their run game to be able to just destroy that defensive line, because they don't have hardly anybody. Sam Ellinger is going to be the guy that needs to get things done. It's going to be tough.
Right, and I think what you mean is, you know, LSU can't revert and go back to the dinosaur ages of the Les Miles offense. But I think it's to say that they keep with the spread offense, but to me it's to keep that rhythm going, those quick passes, the quick check downs, the dump offs to the running backs, the getting the tight end involved, those kind of things. I don't think this LSU offense has to be an offense that just spreads everybody out and just chunks it all over the yard. They don't have to do that to have some success. You could have some success with – it's almost like a controlled spread offense. Run the ball underneath, could do some power running, but have some easy throws and quick throws for Joe Burrow to get into the rhythm of the ball game like they did last week. But it also protects them. I mean, Sadiq Charles was out last week. He'll be back this week. That doesn't seem to be like a big storyline, even though maybe it should be this week. But the offensive line should be better, but we'll see. I still think they got to get the football out of his hand quickly, get the football to the athletes in space to make plays, and that's when LSU is going to be the best. But in my eyes, what LSU absolutely has to do to win on the road in Austin is protect the football. You can't turn the football over, and they haven't done that just after one game. But you do that on the road in a big environment, you're asking for trouble. I think if LSU protects the football, not to say they're not going to have any problems, but they're going to make their life a lot easier in Austin tomorrow night.
Exactly. You cannot turn the ball over.
Several good points, Blaine. I mean, it goes back to the old cliche of control of the line of scrimmage. You know, LSU, yes, they're spreading the field. They're throwing the ball. They're getting playmakers in space. But they still want to be the more physical, imposing team. The thing LSU of old did with Les Miles is they wouldn't really take advantage of what the defense gave them. We were running the same offense. We were running the ball at you. We were running the same formations. No matter what the defense did, this LSU team seems to be taking advantage of matchups, taking advantage of the defensive looks that they're getting, and getting the ball in space. So that's really a positive coming out of week one.
And I love the reads at the line of scrimmage. The look at the sideline, make the adjustments, let trust, and let your Joe Burrow make these decisions. And you've seen him check out some passes. I mean, the touchdown pass to Jamar Chase was an option route that he, you know, he made the throw on. So that, I mean, that was about as tight of a window as he could get to on that slant pass. This is a different Joe Burrow than we saw a year ago, and I just see him continue to improve as the year goes on.
I think it's finally Joe Burrow's team, and they're giving him that option to really control the game. I think he's a fifth-year senior this year. He's got a lot of experience under his time at Urban Meyer, Cardale Jones, Braxton Miller, JT Barrett. And so Joe's really looking to take this LSU team a long ways this year.
Yeah, and I can't wait. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see them develop their identity. We think we know what their identity is after week one against a Sun Belt team. But after this week, I think you're going to know who LSU is. Look, last year we said we wouldn't know who LSU was until week three at Auburn when they went to Jordan-Hare and was able to win with a last-second field goal. I think this year you find out, a week earlier, you find out against Texas who this team is and what their identity is. And everybody in Tiger Nation just can't wait for tomorrow night at 6:30.
That's exactly right. We'll find out if Texas is finally back or LSU will come out on top.
Yeah, and that and much more. Look, we're going to take our last break of the show, and then we're going to be back. And when we come back, we're going to give you our predictions, score predictions on a few NFL games, a few college games, and we're just going to have some fun with it. You'll get my perspective, Aaron McCauley, as well as CD. And we'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports on your home for Acadiana Sports, 103.7 The Game.
Get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
And we're back in for the last time in the open-air Crow Dome at Carrancroft High School.
This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, and I'm Blaine Buitar filling in for Ben Love. Katie Anna High is starting to get here. The fans are starting to pile in. Karen Crow Special Teams is about to take the field. So a lot of excitement and buzz going through the stadium right now, and we're getting ever so close to some football here at the Crow Dome, which you can hear on Z105.9, starting with the pregame show at 6:45. We've got a number of games on our sister stations to check out as well. And right after this show at 6 o'clock, you have Football Night in Acadiana, where RP3 and CD will break down a lot of those matchups and get you pumped up for some high school football. But before we do that, and before we head off into the sunset for today, Aaron and CD, I want to get our perspective and get a little bit of predictions down on wax, make sure everybody knows who we think are going to win the ball games this weekend. So I got five games for us to pick, and let's see how this goes. The first game I got is the UL Raging Cajuns taking on the Liberty Flames tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Cajun Field, and the UL Raging Cajuns are 13-point favorites against Hugh Freeze's Liberty. I personally think UL is going to go into this ball game and totally dominate. I think they got some confidence coming off of that close ball game they played with Mississippi State over in the Superdome last weekend. Levi Lewis got more comfortable as that game got going. I think he has a totally different dynamite type of ball game. You're going to see at least one of the running backs go over the century mark. I like UL to win this ball game tomorrow night by the tune of 42-17.
There's no question. I mean, I really like Coach Billy Napier in this game. I loved it against Mississippi State. They gave him all they could handle, and I think Tommy Stevens is going to be a good quarterback in the SEC. I like UL big in this game, probably by 3 or 4 scores. I'm going to say 42-13 at home.
CD, you're the UL expert on our station. So break down the ball game for us and let us know who's going to win and who are they going to win big.
Oh, the Cajuns is just going to flat out dominate this one. Blame largely because of the fact of what you brought it up perfectly. The fact that, you know, you look at what the Cajuns did last week against Mississippi State, they realize that they have what it takes to just absolutely throttle some opponents. I think Liberty is going to be a prime example of it. They're going to dominate, especially through the run game. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jamal Bell ball out. He's going to be a guy to keep an eye on in terms of the receiving core. He looked really good in his debut for the Vermilion and White as the leading wide receiver. He had 100 yards. I think he can wind up doing more of the same, especially if Bam Jackson isn't 100%. He's day-to-day, a little bit of illness. Hopefully he can be back for this home opener, or should I say true home opener. But the Cajuns is going to wind up winning this one. And I like what our guy Aaron said, 42-13. I think it's going to be 42-3. It's going to be a lopsided ball game. The Cajuns are going to be rolling, and it's just what you'd expect from the Cajuns to start off 1-1.
Clemson Tigers are slated to take on LSU's little brother, the Texas A&M Aggies. Look, Trevor Lawrence struggled in week one. I don't think that happens again. You got Travis Etienne from Jennings over there just balling out 200-plus yards a week ago. I think they absolutely blow the doors off of A&M. I like Clemson to win this ball game, 41-17.
Ooh, this is a tough one for me because I'm a little more confident in Jimbo and A&M. 17 points is a lot of points to lay. 17.5, sorry. I'm gonna take A&M on this spread. I think the game will be closer. Last year went down to the wire. I think Clemson won a last-second touchdown in the end zone. I think A&M keeps it close, but Clemson wins. I think A&M covers the spread.
CD?
I'm going to go with Clemson getting the win. It'll definitely wind up being a very competitive ball game because I think Texas A&M has shown themselves to really look good. Now, mind you, it's against Texas State last week, and they wound up looking dominant, but I feel like they can wind up turning things around and making this a competitive ball game to really show that they ain't messing around in 2019.
The Hoodats on Monday night are going to go and take on the Texans in the Superdome. They're ready to put this monkey behind them of this no-call BS. I think you're going to see a very motivated Saints team, a team that's going to be poised to play very well. I think this is a game where Drew Brees just goes off. I think the Saints are going to win this game somewhere around the score of 34-24.
Man, the Saints are chomping at the bit. The Texans do have a lot on offense. They lost Lamar Miller for the year. Still got DeAndre Hopkins. Deshaun Watson's a game breaker. I like the Saints in this game. They're coming out, you know, salty from the way their season did last year. I like the Saints to win.
And I like the Saints to win as well. It'll be a dominant performance from the Saints' offensive side of the football. I feel like you look at what the Texans' defense gave up over the last week or so, especially to Davion Clowney. J.J. Watt's still going to be a big force, but I feel like they wound up giving up on the wrong guy. And I think Jadeveon Clowney is going to hurt that defensive line and really help that front seven is going to struggle throughout Monday night's matchup. And I think maybe Laremy Tunsil, even with him in that number, you're going to see Deshaun Watson get put on his back quite a bit.
I tend to agree there. Now let's look at the main course of the weekend, the game we've all been looking for all offseason. Your LSU Tigers travel to take on the Texas Longhorns in Austin tomorrow night at 6:30. All the action can be heard, including the pregame starting at 4:30 on 103.7 The Game. Look, LSU is hungry. They're ready to prove a point. You saw it last week that they just came out and they dominated. They executed. I think you see more of that in Austin, but it's going to be a lot closer game than a lot of people expect. I don't think LSU is just going to go over there and blow the doors off of the Longhorns. I think LSU wins this game 31-21, but I think it's a game late in the fourth quarter, and then LSU puts it to bed with a touchdown.
Now, Blaine, I'm a little bit more optimistic than you, you know, being a homer, being a big LSU fan. I think LSU goes in there, creates a couple early turnovers, and it snowballs. Texas gets a late score to keep it close. I like LSU 31-14.
CD, got to get it on wax, buddy.
All right, got to get it on wax. I got LSU winning this one. It's definitely going to be a close one. I think that spread, it's a little heavy, so I'm going to go with LSU winning this one. It's going to be a 35-31 ball game. LSU gets the win.
Yeah, and I think, you say it's a 10-point game as well. These games are, a lot of folks are thinking that, you know, you look online, they're thinking LSU just goes over there, puts up 40 points on this Longhorn team. You got to realize this Longhorn team's pretty damn good in their own right, but LSU just got something extra this year. It just feels different. Look, this has been a lot of fun filling in for the Ben Love over here on 103.7 The Game during Bumper to Bumper Sports. I'll be back with him Thursday night at the Tap Room where we do a little prep football from 6 to 6:30. But just in 45 minutes, flip the station over to Z105.9 where Aaron McCauley and I have you all covered of all the action here at the Crow Dome where the Carrick Golden Bears are set to take on the Acadiana Wrecking Rams. Keep it tuned here, though, on 103.7 The Game for Football Night in Acadiana. This has been fun. Take it easy.